dedicated to all the hackers and the crackers.
To the hackers and the crackers.
I see in binary, I speak source code. Step on my toes, I'll post a million JPEGs of you in a fag pose. In your digital stance, sitting firewalled ho. Cause I'm riding the net in my 6-4. I was a dick with my 56. Now with my cable, I'm able to get that stable. On the out, my name is Ace and I'm a Leo. On the digital highway, my name is Neo and I'm a hero. In a flash, I'll sue you on burning Dreamcast. You need some ISO? Let me through my hard drive rifle. Our exchange you could never stifle. In a digital hug, you just caught the love bug. I bootlegged your CD. I caused the fight between Un and Jay-Z. You see, G, it's all gonna be free. Whether we take it by force or we take it nicely. You feel that rattle in your bones? When I tell you we just hacked Dow Jones. And NASDAQ leaves you flat on your back. Cause I am he who loves to hack and crack. Cause I am he who loves to hack and crack.
Dedicated to the hackers and the crackers. Serial code, source code, ISO, RAND.
Wow. Hello, and welcome to Binary Revolution Radio, episode 127. And was that just me, or did the theme song sound really garbled?
Yeah, it sounded fast and then slow and fast and then slow, and you actually sound a little bit garbled now, too. So
hopefully
this isn't going to mess up the show.
Hopefully no one's hacksawing my internet connection. That's not good.
You could be getting owned.
That would be very bad. So anyway, episode 127, air date 12/20/2005. I'm Black Ratchet. Strom's off somewhere in the greater suburbia of Los Angeles. I'm here today with Knot Theory.
Hey, what's up, everybody? I'm very glad to be on show 2^7-1. It's pretty exciting.
Ooh, yes, I didn't even think of that.
No, it's very important.
Yeah, well, this is our special Chris McQuantica episode. So we're just, because I don't like this whole non-denominational holiday thing.
So you got to put them all in there?
Yeah, Chris McQuantica. I don't like to have the whole, what do they call it, Chrismica? Or no, Hana Krishma Kwanzaa. That's what Virgin Mobile calls it. That drives me nuts.
Okay.
That's my own holiday. And plus, I think I like it because each holiday gets its own syllable, or close to it.
Most of a syllable.
Yeah, most of a syllable. Well, Kwanzaa's got its own whole thing, but the whole at the end, that could be any holiday, I guess.
This is true. I think we're shortchanging somebody somewhere. We're going to get email about it, I'm sure.
Well, I guess we could have, like, Krishna Kwanzaa Ka Dan or something. When's Ramadan?
Oh, Ramadan's like a whole month, isn't it?
Well, yeah, but I don't think it's around the solstice.
I believe you're right. I don't know much about it.
I guess you could call it a Chrisma Quantica Solstice or something. Because they got the whole druid thing out there.
Oh man, it's too involved for me.
Yeah.
How about Happy New Year? Does that work?
New Year, yeah. That was good. Despite all the crazy stuff that's been going on about this, I do always say happy holidays, because I don't know why I say it, but I say happy holidays just to cover everything. I'm good for redundancy.
Because you never know. I was actually at a friend's house the other day, and his Con Ed person comes by and checking the meter, and when she leaves, she says, Merry Christmas, but he's definitely 100% Jewish, so he just kind of stared at her like she was crazy.
Well, I mean, you know, that's an honest mistake to make. That's fine. I mean, I don't know.
No, it's not. She's evil. She must be destroyed.
Exactly. She must be destroyed. That's why I do the whole happy holidays to cover all my bases and just to avoid annoying situations like that.
Right. Well, you know, when the legions come, you won't be destroyed. There you go.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. When the PC police come, I will still be here.
Yep.
All right. So we really don't have much housekeeping this week besides the whole you know, Chris McCaw, so special. There's nothing special about it. I don't know if you're going to actually do anything special. Santa's not going to show up halfway through the show.
Oh.
Neither Hanukkah Harry or Kwanzaa Butt.
Hanukkah Harry. I've never heard that
Hanukkah
one.
Hanukkah Harry. Yeah, I remember that. That's good stuff. That's what the little Jewish kids have with their Hanukkah bush, and they have Hanukkah Harry. I'm good like that.
They don't have Chinooka Charlie.
Chinooka Charlie.
I just love when it's spelled as a CH. I can't get
Oh. See, and that's part of the reason why I never say Happy Hanukkah online, because I'm never sure how to spell it. I'm just like going, I don't know.
Mm.
So I just go and I just say, yeah, whatever. So, do you want to go straight into the email theme?
Sure.
All right. Hopefully this will actually play correctly. I guess that got off okay. You never can actually tell with the theme because it stutters anyway, so you never know.
Mm-hmm.
We got our first email tonight from Mike. He says, "What's up? Just checking out your old episodes. Nice stuff. I work for a large, evil telecom. Won't state who it is because they try and control everything I do. Mostly out of fear. LOL. I've been working out of the NetSec for various places over the past 5 years, work for the DOD at the Joint Forces Intelligence Command and other places. I am starting my public speaking projects this upcoming year at the 2006 Cybercrime Summit in March. You should see about speaking there. They're mostly forensic guys, but I wanted to speak because I know a bit about how to get the data there for the forensics, if you know what I mean. Well, props anyways on the show. Mike," and he's a certified ethical hacker, so props to him. And mainly because I put this on because we only have two emails this week, and it's, you know, we're scraping the bottom of the barrel here. I guess everyone has the old holiday season. They're not listening to the radio show or something. But I thought it was pretty spiffy that he's working for the Joint Forces Intelligence Command. Those guys are hardcore. Those are crazy.
Very cool.
And
yeah,
but I find it kind of creepy because a Fed has emailed the show.
OMG hacks.
Yeah. Oh my God.
Oh my God thing later.
I really don't know when it started.
Okay, well, in any case.
I like it with the whole Z in the front.
I think it's cool looking. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah, it gets the sound a whole lot cooler.
Mm.
I knew it actually caught on when I talked about it with my sister when she came home from college, and I said, apparently, oh my God, spelled with a Z now. Yeah, I've been seeing that. This is the exciting conversations we have. Anyway, Mike, good luck on the talk. Shouts out, and hope it goes well. And you should have said where the Cybercrime Summit is. I figure cybercrime is pretty global, so you never know what it is, especially since you're being a Fed. They have all of those junkets out there going down to Tahiti or something on the taxpayers' dollars.
Oh, must be nice.
Yeah. I should become a Fed just so I can do that.
Seriously.
Our next email this evening is from, I'm assuming this is his name, Ostriches3. I assume it's the plural, ostrich. The Apple OS on iPods is crap. It never works. Now, there is now Linux for you iPod. Check out iPodLinux.org. Actually, she says /main_page, but if you go to iPodLinux.org, it's okay. Anyway, it continues on. It is not yet supported for all generations of iPods, but it works on the older ones. It's way cool. You can even play movies with it. Now, okay, I'm going to sort of warm up the whole rant thing here. I've tried iPod Linux, and I got to say, Ostriches3, you are the first person that I've ever actually heard someone say it's good. I mean, the damn thing can hardly play MP3s right. I'm going to quote from their wiki. Currently, we use Intel's highly optimized library for the ARM processor that includes MP3 decoding support. The MP3 player in Podzilla that uses this library runs quite well, but it isn't perfect. Some songs will skip, VBRs aren't handled too well, and high bit rates aren't always decoded fast enough. So, they say, like, straight off the bat, it isn't a good MP3 player. But, you know, hey, ooh, it runs Linux, is this cool, yeah. Let me enjoy my $500 iPod that comes to paperweight with a show me a picture of Tux. Color me fucking impressed.
Oh, you're such a cynic.
No, I mean, you know, the whole thing. I did play with when it first came out, and they had the whole... I mean, it is a breeze to install. Shouts to them. It's a completely easy to install and set on up, and... I mean, if you, you know, screw something up, Apple has released their own little iPod firmware thing that you can reflash it and get back to the original operating system. And also, in their defense, they did state that the fourth generation iPods they're better supported. Apparently, they have like a faster processor. They gotta need that when they're decoding movies or something. So, like, better hardware actually does well. But in reality, it's my opinion, that's a horrid excuse. You don't toss hardware at a problem because of crappy code. It just shouldn't be allowed. I had a professor at school who used to call anyone who would do that software jockeys in a very derogatory term.
I agree.
Exactly. I mean, if you're making, like, 1,000... like, you know, widgets that need to do something, and your code isn't good enough to run on these widgets, what do? Do you sit down and you optimize your code, or do you say, oh, you need to spend an extra $5 on each unit to buy a better processor? In reality, you're costing the company $5,000. So what you should always be, that guy that can come in and say, well, geez, I can save you, you know, $5,000, $50,000, depending on how many of these units you're going to make, just, you know, pay me $40,000, and, you know, you go in, you sit around, you go in, you say, oh, I like to work from home, and you sit around home for 2 weeks, and one afternoon, you clean up the code, and then you come in and say, oh, I've been working on this for 2 weeks, man. It's horrible. But I think I finally got it. And they'll basically treat you as the second coming of Jesus. They'll throw palms down when you walk into the office. And
so what about rose petals?
Rose petals, too. Oh, yeah. Yeah, I guess if you're Hindu, I think Hindus do the rose petal thing, don't they?
I don't know. They did it in Coming to America, and I thought it was awesome.
There you go. Exactly. No, I figure you just want rose petals in life.
Yeah, that's it. You know, that's all I'm working for. It's just to get people to throw rose petals at my feet. So. Anyway.
That's what you have. You have, like, on your, like, resume, objective. Get a job where people throw rose petals at my feet.
Actually, I just wrote up my resume and sent it somewhere, you know, just for the hell of it. And I forgot to put that on there. So I maybe won't get a call back from them. Who knows?
Actually, honestly, if you didn't put it on there, I think you're more likely to get a call back then.
No way. If I got a resume put on my desk where it said, like, my goal in life, it said, have rose petals thrown on my feet, I'd be like, that is a person with vision, and I would hire them on the spot.
Actually,
I don't even know what they would do. I would just start paying them.
Well, that's why you're not a management position.
Exactly.
What do you do? What does this guy do here? I don't know, but his resume just sounded really cool.
Exactly.
Actually, talking about resumes, let's have a logical thought process, because, hey, we're out of email because no one's freaking emailed us. One of the software developers' weblogs that I read, one of the guys recently got let go by his company, so he redid his resume, and I think his right at the top it says, tasty, attention-grabbing headers, and it says, like, you know, really good in PHP and all kinds of stuff. That actually did sound impressive, I will admit that. But I did like the heading. I don't know. I'm glad my resume is out of date and I don't have to worry about that. Knock on wood. Oh yeah, just so everyone knows, we are live tonight. However, Dr. Zygmunt has not decided to show up. He apparently has his real life. We didn't actually inform him that we definitely were going to be live tonight, so we didn't clear it with him. And because Strom's not here, we have no one to take a live phone call. So you can call the live phone calls all you want, but you're not going to get on. So I apologize for that.
Well, you know what? That gives me a perfect opportunity then for the whole show to say how much I love Microsoft. So get ready for it, guys.
Yes,
and nobody will be able to call in and be like, nope, Microsoft sucks. No. Tonight, Microsoft rules you, okay?
Yes, we're going to talk about Visual Studio 2005 and the whole Visual Studio suite and all kinds of yummy, fun things that's been going on. So actually, let's talk about what's going on. What have you been up to, Not Theory?
Well, I've been working. And working some more, and I actually have two companies in the process of trying to talk me out of working for myself right now. So that's been about it. I've been working and giving these people my resumes, and nothing really exciting. No personal hacking or anything like that. Just doing my usual thing. I did find some cool tools this week, though. Maybe I can talk about that for a second. I've got a tool to manage. It's for managing either Postgres or Microsoft SQL Server or MySQL or I think Oracle, and it's almost like an IDE for databases. It's called EMS, and the webpage is sqlmanager.net. So if you go there, you can see all the versions and check it out. But I mean, this thing has like a visual database builder. It has a visual query builder. It has all kinds of backup and restore utilities, and for stored procedures and functions and all that stuff, it has a debugger. I was going to use a bad word, but it has a debugger, and it's just amazing. Because normally debugging stuff in a database is a real hassle, but now you can step through it with their little tool, and it's very cool. And there's a free version that doesn't have all the features, but you can try out the pay version for 30 days, see what you think. So, I highly recommend
how much does it cost?
Oh, you know something? Well, I first checked it out the other day. It said something about $195, but I started talking to Stank about it, and a couple days later, unless maybe I'm crazy, but a couple days later it was up to $275. So I don't know if I missed some kind of sale, but I think it's $275 for business and $235 for personal or something like that. So it's pricey, but if you're really into databases and you need to do some serious stuff, it definitely does it all.
There's
a Linux version
cool.
as well.
Ooh.
Yeah.
So does it just support Oracle and, or does it?
I'm looking at it right now. It's MySQL, Postgres, SQL Server, Interbase / Firebird, DB2, and DBISIM. Apparently there is no Oracle support. I thought there was.
Oh, pwned.
Ah, well, whatever.
It supports MySQL, so that's all that really matters.
Well, yeah,
everyone should use MySQL.
Oh, yeah. But actually, each one of these things is a different piece of software. So if you get the Postgres version, you don't get the MySQL version. So, while you have the opportunity, you should switch to Postgres now so you don't have to buy two tools.
That's kind of interesting. I would assume that they would just sort of roll support into everything about that. But
but then they can't sell as much software.
Yeah, true.
What would be really nice is if they had a version that supported, like you said, both MySQL and Postgres and SQL Server, and I could tell it, hey, I've got a MySQL database, convert it to a Postgres database for me with just one click. That would be supreme shizzle.
Well, actually, I've been finding out lately that because of all this wonderful ODBC support, if you use the Microsoft SQL tools, they have this what's it called? Data transaction something or other wizard, and basically it's a giant pipe. And I gotta say, it is the most useful utility ever, because basically you say, I have a database here. I have a database that I want to put here. You know, convert it for me, and it does everything automatically. I gotta say, it is one of the finest pieces of software Microsoft has ever even made.
Whoa. Okay, I'm going to have to check that out at some point.
I'm not sure if it's included with a sequel 2005 Express Edition, but you might want to try that out. It's amazing, and if you have like an ODBC driver for it, picks it up fine, no problem. Like, bam, it's there. It's amazing.
Wow, I'm sorry, what is the actual utility itself called?
It's like DTS Export Wizard or DTS Import Export Wizard. It's if you install all the client utilities on your computer, you get it.
Wow. That's just awesome. Because actually, I was talking to somebody at this company today about doing that exact thing. And he said, oh, yeah, I could probably write something with that uses ODBC to do that. But, I mean, it's already written, so no point.
Yeah, I'm not sure what the license of it is, but we've got, like, you know, licenses up the wazoo for SQL Server at work, so I get pretty lucky on that. And actually, I now have a license for SQL Server at home, but we'll get into that later.
So now you can convert YAML to Postgres, right?
I could, couldn't I? That's something I'm going to have to try.
We'll see about that.
Yeah, too bad Postgres sucks. Got like 2 days after our episode, I was like, oh, okay, let me go sit down and try Postgres. Within 30 minutes, I was pulling out my hair going, I just want to create a goddamn table. Oh,
yeah, you know how you create a table? You said create table.
No, it yelled about me about, what is it? Something about like my auto increment nonsense wasn't set up correctly. And I was just like, come on, I just want to have something that increments every time I add something.
Yeah. Well, see, MySQL and Postgres have different names for it. And MySQL is an auto increment, and Postgres is a serial.
Mm.
See, you just got to email me, and I'll set you straight.
I did email you. Plus the whole, I couldn't actually convert the YAML database over to it with all the utilities provided because all of the wonderful database images and all kinds of fun stuff like that. So that wasn't fun.
No,
we'll go back over here. So we're talking about how I got SQL Server 2005. I actually do have a legal copy of the standard edition of SQL Server because last week, Thursday, I went to the Microsoft Visual Studio 2005 launch event in Boston. Yes, and got gobs of free software. They basically, for showing up and spending 4 hours there, I got a copy of Visual Studio 2005 Standard, SQL Server 2005 Standard with one client access license, which is another nonsense. We'll rant about that later. And I get whenever BizTalk 2006, whatever BizTalk is, I still didn't figure what that out. I get a copy of that. So good shit.
Nice.
Yes, and then I immediately departed from there, and then I headed over, and then I bought a house on a whim, just decided to go do it.
Wow, that must be nice. I wish I had money like that.
Yeah, I wish I did too. Yes, if you ever want to, like, you know, just completely drop your docs out there, what you want to do is you want to buy a house. And thank God no one knows exactly where I went and bought a house, because boy, oh boy, my docs are out there. Holy crap, you get all over the place. You have to sign your soul away. Man, it's amazing.
Yeah, you get pwned by the city, whatever the county clerk office or whatever it is. They have everything on you there. They know how much you spent. They know everything about you.
Yeah, who owns the house? Who sold the house? It's creepy. So yeah, that's the other fun thing. I figured the sad part is I completely have to go from a Western Electric 5E over to a Nortel DMS-100 for my phone. I was like, oh man, that just sucks.
Wow, you're really that picky about it, huh?
Yeah, I mean, I don't like, well, because around here, at least for us, like, there's all kinds of crazy stuff you can do on a 5ESS, but, like, the DMS-100 doesn't support it. like, you know, Ringback isn't there, and the ANAC's in a different place, and I gotta go relearn everything, and my local toll tandem is completely different. Oh, man, it's just like, it's horrible. I gotta go completely relearn the network, which I guess is fun in its own right, but still, I'm seriously,
you shouldn't be complaining about having to learn stuff. It's terrible.
Oh, no, I'm not complaining that I have to relearn stuff, but mostly my complaint is the fact that, like, certain things that I like about my 5ESS is no longer available to me. It sucks or
right. It does suck or.
Yes. Anyway, so on to the show topic tonight, which is Visual Studio 2005. And basically, we're going to kind of branch off from just Visual Studio, and we're going to talk about .NET and the .NET Compact Framework and Smart Clients and all kinds of fun stuff. So what is the .NET Framework? Do you want to take this, or shall I?
You know, actually, there are parts of the .NET Framework that still mystify me, so maybe you should take it, and I'll chime in if I got anything exciting.
I don't think anyone knows all about the .NET framework. Actually, I did find the job for me at the launch event. I was walking around, and one of the guys had a staff badge on, and his job title was .NET Evangelist. And I was just like, oh my god, that's the coolest title ever!
Wow.
And apparently, I flagged him over and said, so excuse me, what exactly does a .NET Evangelist do? And he says, I just go out and I just preach .NET. And I'm like, that's pretty cool. He basically just sits there and if you have questions about the code, he answers them for you. And I'm like, wow, that's pretty nice.
Are they going to start a .NET religion?
I don't know. I guess you could say Microsoft is its own religion.
Hmm.
True. All right, so anyway, well, I mean, the whole thing about the .NET Compact Framework is that it's all designed to be one unified system on all the Microsoft platforms. Like, for example, if you have, you know, Windows 2000 or Win XP or Windows Mobile or Pocket PC 2003, before .NET came out, you'd have to worry about, I forget, what does MFC stand for? Microsoft Form Control?
Microsoft Foundation classes, I think.
Foundation classes, okay. And there was like, you know, if you varied between different versions, you had like, you know, you had an MFC for window control and Windows NT, and then you had one for 2000, you had a different one for 95. But when .NET came out, basically what they said, okay, we're scrapping MFC and we're preferring everyone go to this. And basically it's a general way of just saying, okay, I want to create a window and I want to create it here, and just everything, what happens is that everyone knows how to interpret the .NET. And what that's done through is called something a common language runtime. And essentially if you ever downloaded it, the CLR is included in something called the .NET framework. And what the .NET framework is, a set of libraries for each individual, like, you know, one for 2000, there's one for XP, there's one for Windows Mobile, and they all understand the same function call. So, you know, a window in 2000 is now a window in XP, is now a window in Windows Mobile. And actually, they've expanded this. Well, Microsoft hasn't expanded this. People have tried to expand this over to Linux. And you got, like, you know, the Mono project, where if you want to learn more about Mono, we're not covering that here, but I believe I cover that in my TWAT episode. And
mm-hmm.
And Knot Theory just crashed.
No, I'm still here.
Oh, you're here?
No, my phone just beeped because I unplugged it from the computer.
Oh, your phone? That was your phone?
Well, no, sorry, that was my laptop. My laptop
beeped
because my phone was unplugged, and I just walked to my front door, and my front door is wide open. That's interesting. Because I know I closed it. Well, anyway, so if you happen to hear me screaming at some point about being murdered or something like that, I'm probably really being murdered.
Yeah, I'll have the 3-way 911 on.
Oh, I was going to say I have asterisks hang up on my channel so I don't mess up the stream.
that That's how hardcore he is. He just says, the show must go on.
There we go.
So, So up until I don't know when exactly the release party was. I guess you could say like early mid-November, they finally released two things. They released Visual Studio 2005, and they released .NET on 2000. They also released .NET 2.0, which was the third version of .NET that came out. And thanks to Kyle L., he also pointed out that that they've actually released the .NET frameworks on different processors. That's another thing that I forgot to mention. So, it doesn't really matter what processors he's using. It all runs through the CLR, and the CLR knows how to talk to each processor. Basically, what Microsoft did is they did Java correctly, though it's not this huge hulking mass. So they released .NET 2.0 and they released Visual Studio 2005. And the three things they really kind of focused on were the CLR was much vastly improved with the whole various, all the stuff I discussed. They kind of revamped it and they kind of rebuilt it from scratch, or so they said. They really started trying to focus on mobile computing and smartphones and Pocket PC and all that kind of stuff. And the third thing that they tried to do was smart clients. So now, what smart clients are is, I personally think this term is very stupid because I've been thinking about smart clients for years, literally. Smart clients are what it is easily deployed client applications that basically you can have it connect up to a server. I can take my Pocket PC out. I can go install an application on it. I can sync up with the database. I can make changes on the database while I'm offside my cradle. And then when I'm out, plug my, whether it be my laptop or my Pocket PC in, it knows how to fix everything and, take care of problems that may have arisen. And They really tried to focus on this for like mobile computing and the executives on the go and all kinds of stuff.
Mm.
So, yeah, I personally have been thinking about this for years. I don't understand why this is such a big deal now, but whatever. I've been doing this in one shape or form since about like 2001. I just guess it's kind of has a better name now.
Now it's got market buzz.
Yeah, it's got buzz. Buzz is good. They're selling the sizzle. Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Those are the three big things they kind of focused on. They also, like, all the whiz-bang features of Visual Studio 2005, which we'll kind of cover later. Do you want to talk about managed versus unmanaged code? Since you're basically...
Yeah, I think I can probably... Well, I don't know that I'm an expert. Maybe I'll explain.
Compared to me, how about that?
Okay, well, okay. Managed code is basically like what you were talking about, the .NET framework and all of those classes, and the ability to just say, I want to create a text box, and you instantiate a text box, and boom, it pops up, stuff like that. Unmanaged code is kind of like underneath the hood. Everything's done more manually. Memory management, you have to keep track of your memory management on your own, whereas in .NET code or managed code, you can allocate something, and if you forget to deallocate it, as soon as it loses scope, the system garbage collection deallocates it for you. Or the garbage collection may happen whenever, but it'll at least mark it to be garbage collected. In unmanaged code, if you don't unallocate deallocate memory, it's just going to sit there and never be reclaimed until the machine or the device is rebooted. But basically, unmanaged code lets you get to all the functionality in whatever your device is that's not neatly wrapped up. A perfect example is Windows Mobile 2003 has Pocket Outlook on it, but there's no .NET libraries for Pocket Outlook. There's basically Windows CE libraries. And Windows Mobile is basically the .NET stuff on top of good old Windows CE from back in the day. And Windows CE is a way to access Pocket Outlook, but if you want to do it on your smartphone, you have to go into unmanaged code, and then you have to manually like touch all of these objects and allocate and deallocate things, and it's pretty hairy. But basically it lets you get to those things that you couldn't otherwise get to. Now, in Windows Mobile 5.0, a lot of the things you needed to do in 2003 in unmanaged code that there weren't libraries, or there weren't managed libraries for, they now do have managed libraries for it. There is a Pocket Outlook library. There is a more straightforward game API. I heard a rumor that there's a camera API now, but
yes.
I don't know if that's entirely true. Oh, there is. Okay. Because I'm thinking about getting the Trio 700W, and if it's got a camera API, I'm pretty damn happy. But I hear the Bluetooth API also is managed now as well, because in Windows Mobile 2003, Bluetooth, like, I wrote some code to mess with Bluetooth, but let me tell you, getting Visual C++ code to talk to C# was not exactly straightforward. Once you know how to do it, it's fine, but right off the bat, the system of using embedded Visual C++ and Visual Studio 2003 and, like, trying to hook those together to write an application with managed and unmanaged code is just really confusing. I would think from the start it would set things up the right way, but there's a lot of stuff you got to go in and do manually. Now, Visual Studio 2005, you can write both managed and unmanaged code in the same environment, so you can debug them simultaneously. Now, unfortunately, I was just trying to do that before the show, and actually while I was on the phone with Black Ratchet before, I was trying to write some unmanaged code in 2005, and it wasn't working for me. But the cool thing was, I was talking on my phone with him while I was debugging an application on that same phone, and the application was crashing while we were talking, but the phone was still working. So I have to give Microsoft props on that.
Well, I also got to give you props on that, because that right there is pretty hardcore.
I do what I can for the show. I really wanted to get this thing working so that I could attest to the fact that it really does, Visual Studio 2005 really does wrap everything nicely together, so you can write your native code, your unmanaged code, and your managed code all together, debug it in one single system, and make it work like the way that it should from day one. But unfortunately, I'm having a little bit of a problem with it right now, so not working this very second, but they tell me that you can do it. But in any case, it is really slick that I can debug on a device that I'm using currently and not have it be a problem. You know, the application crashing has nothing to do with the actual operation of the phone. Unless maybe you were doing something in native code and you did something really nasty and messed a whole bunch of things up. But my function was simple enough where I didn't kill the phone. So hopefully that makes it clear.
Yeah, the cool thing about the .NET framework is that they have everything sort of, for lack of a better term, they have everything sort of sandboxed. So like that is one of the advantages of it, that, you know, if something goes wrong, it doesn't actually thrash and take out the entire system. Unlike, you know, unmanaged code, that you can do some of that if you actually really want to. .NET makes it very hard to do something like that.
Right. Yeah, and actually the only time I've ever had an application crash on my Windows Mobile phone is when it needed to get to some unmanaged code. So the .NET framework on the mobile platform, in my mind, or in my experience, has been very, very stable. So I'm very impressed.
And plus, like, I mean, when we're talking about unmanaged, and he's talking a lot about the phone, it's not just, you know, phones, it's anything. But, you know, he's super elite with his pocket PC phone.
I have a smartphone. I have a very simple smartphone. Actually, I even found it for $185 now. So
how much?
$185 unlocked.
Wow, that's not bad at all.
Yeah. So
Jeez.
God, yeah, it's pretty cool.
Now, do you want to drop the model right on the air? We'll give them a plug.
Sure. The model that I have is the QTEK 8010. And there's another company called iMate that makes the same phone. I think it's the iMate SP3. I don't have the link to the place that has it really cheap right now, but if people are really interested, I'll post it in the forums or post it in the show notes or something like that. But it's a pretty good phone. Windows Mobile 2003 second edition. It's a smartphone. It doesn't have a keyboard or anything like that because it's a smartphone. But it's pretty slick. I think it's got 30 gigs of RAM. And like I said, you know, I can hook it right up to Visual Studio and just start banging applications out with it. So it's pretty cool.
Yeah, I got to say, the whole Pocket PC development or Windows Mobile development on Visual Studio 2005 is very slick. I thought it was pretty good in 2003, but 2005, they've really streamlined more than a few things. I mean, the virtual smartphone really kicks ass.
Yeah, definitely. And the virtual Pocket PC and all that stuff is really definitely cool. And you know what? It runs a lot faster than Visual Studio 2003 with all that stuff.
Hell yeah.
So it's just awesome. Mobile development to me is really cool. And like I said, Windows Mobile 2003 is missing a few things, but from what people tell me, Windows Mobile 5.0 or Windows Mobile 2005, whatever you want to call it, has everything wrapped up all nice with the .NET Compact Framework 2.0, and it's just awesome. I am very excited for the Trio 700.
When's the Trio 700 coming out?
Well, you know, I asked somebody at Verizon today, and they said that they didn't know, and the website says something about it's coming out early 2006. But I think, I can't promise, but I think the Trio 700W is a Verizon phone with EVDO and all that other junk, and I think it runs Windows Mobile 5.0. Because if it doesn't, then I won't get it. But yeah, Windows Mobile 5.0.
Well, Windows Mobile 5.0 actually came out before Visual Studio 2005, so I would hope that it's at least prepared to run 5.0. Like, I have a, what's it called, Axum XV50-something-or-other. And they have the whole, I mean, they have, like, it's running Pocket PC 2003 second edition, but I went on Dell's website, and they said, well, if you want to run Windows Mobile 5.0, you know, get the CD right here. But, they're charging me money for it, which I'm not too happy about, but they say, yeah, sure, get it. It runs it fine, so I'm debating that, but the whole house thing that's kind of crimping my fun budget.
Yeah, I could see that being a problem. I can't even imagine how anybody in this current real estate market can afford a house. So, props to you.
So I just had to give up my firstborn. You know, don't have him yet, so we'll see who that.
Oh, that's not bad.
Yeah, so I didn't actually know the Trio did the EVDO. That's interesting.
Yeah, although allegedly I've heard mixed reports about this, but they tell me that it's got EVDO support for its own functionality, but they say that you won't be able to use it for dial-up networking because Verizon wants you to buy that $50 or $60 EVDO card.
God,
yes, Verizon has struck again and disabled more features that... I've heard that Verizon does this with a lot of phones. They disable features that they think are going to cost them money.
They did that. It was a huge uproar. Actually, I think Stank got bit by this. He bought a Bluetooth phone, and one of the things that he wanted was the whole... I don't even know what he wanted. He wanted, like, transfer pictures or something, or transfer ringtones. And the phone just flat out didn't support it. They basically neutered the ability for it. And
yep.
I gotta say that's lame. That's like, I mean, what the hell?
Of course,
like, you know, that's nothing like the T-Mobile Sidekick.
Oh man, let's not even get started.
I'm sorry. The device itself is awesome. It's just everything else about it sucks.
Yeah, but when the Trio 700 comes out, you should definitely consider it because the Trio 700 with like a mini SD Wi-Fi card, like it's got everything. You can't beat it.
Wonder if you can do. I wonder if you can VoIP on that sucker. That'd be pretty cool.
Pretty sure it shouldn't be an issue. It's probably got a pretty damn fast processor on it, too, by like a 400 megahertz or something like that.
Jeez, Mr. Ratchet, you have no airtime this month, but apparently you transferred 2 gigs of data. Oh, jeez, I don't know what happened.
Yeah, I don't know how it's possible. That would definitely be me, because I would just have the thing all day streaming just garbage, just to get my money's worth.
With the Sidekick when I first like got it. I mean, hell, even now. I mean, first couple of months when I got it, I was literally doing about 50 megs a month. And that's on a slow GSM connection. I got to say, I was very impressed by that. And I even talked to a couple of people who had GSM, and I was like, what's your bandwidth like? Or no, sorry, what's your data transfer like? Oh, yeah, I do about 50 megs a month. Really? I'm like, yeah, that's me. I'm hardcore like that. I think
I saw some people in the developer forums bragging about how they were doing, hundreds of megabytes a month because they were just downloading huge applications and, transferring all kinds of stuff back and forth, so.
Well, this is just using their pre-canned application support, so.
Yeah,
I mean,
this is
pretty good, so. I'm elite like that.
I'm definitely fair.
Okay. Visual Studio 2005. So, now, let's just toss this out here because you constantly were talking about it before. You don't have Visual Studio 2005. You have Visual Studio 2005 Beta 2.
Beta 2, right. I got it for like $5 from Microsoft with their Windows Mobile Evaluation Kit or something like that. And it's good, I found out that, before we started the show, I was trying to do a little bit of debugging check out the native code debugging capabilities. And I managed to crash Visual Studio twice, possibly 3 times. I found 2 bugs in the documentation, like typos, and not just like silly typos in comments, like show-stopping typos that were not too easy to find. So Visual Studio 2005 Beta 2 has got some serious issues, but 2005 Beta 2 has serious issues, but I don't know about the full version. Have you gotten it to crash yet?
I haven't, but I will admit I haven't been doing such hardcore stuff as you have. I've been fiddling around with Pro at work, and I have Standard at home and working here, and just like normal, like I wouldn't say like day-to-day use, but relatively heavy use. Like I've been doing Pocket PC development on it. I've been also doing a couple of native Windows applications, and I haven't run into any issues with it. When you were like saying, "Oh, I crashed it like 3 times," I was like, "Wow, what in God's name are you doing, man?"
I'm either just really hardcore or totally incompetent, and I would probably go for the latter.
Nah, you're hardcore. You're just nuts. I never care about the whole latter and former thing, so. Latter, former. I don't know which one's which.
I don't even know which one's which. I just say whichever one sounds good.
Yeah. Anyway, let's go over my personal favorite features. You can go toss whatever you want in here. There's a new, I wouldn't say new, but a vastly improved something called IntelliSense. Now, what IntelliSense is basically you start typing out like a variable name that you've done before, and it like says it pops down the bottom. It like auto completes the variable for you. You can continue typing it out, but it says it comes down in a very unobtrusive way, says, "Oh, you must mean this." And you can hit tab and it'll auto-complete it for you. And, if you're using a certain type of object, it has all the function calls on there, and actually, when you start typing out the function call, it does that auto-complete thing. But when you select, start passing variables back and forth, it says, okay, what the function call is, you need to int here, and it'll say, so-and-so, this means what you need to feed is this data bit right here. And, it explains what the function does and explains what you're supposed to feed it and what it actually should result in. And it's pretty cool. And 2003 had that. But what 2005 actually came out with is it'll actually start picking up stuff within your own classes. Like IntelliSense in 2003 just had like all the basic Microsoft stuff, like official Microsoft, all the documentation was there, and it would pick up on that. But in 2005, if you actually document your code, if you document the code the official Microsoft way, and if you like start doing, you know, various classes, it'll pick all that stuff up and it'll actually create the documentation to you on the fly. So I find that really cool. I actually thought it was the best thing since sliced bread until someone actually pointed out that there's two ways of coding stuff, and I'm not sure how many people are familiar with this. One is called top down, which you do all the high level stuff first and then you do the low level stuff. And the other way is bottom up, which is the exact opposite. You do all the bottom nitty gritty stuff first and then you do the high level stuff. And personally myself, I'm bottom up. And IntelliSense is basically designed to work like that because you need to have all your classes and your functions already written out and documented for IntelliSense to work at 100%. But for those people who are out there going top down, you're hosed because it doesn't know jack crap about what you're actually, you know, calling this class.
Right. Yeah, I think it's hard to do top down development sometimes. It's hard to say because I kind of do a mix of both depending on what the application is. Sometimes it's easier to see the bigger picture and then kind of design the functions as I need them. And sometimes it's easy to say like, okay, I'm going to need these little bricks here and I can build them right now and then build the application. It all depends on the type of application it is, I guess. But it doesn't really matter because I only program in Ruby anymore, so.
Well, what?
No,
what?
Reaction.
You're actually you're not doing Ruby anymore?
No, I said I'm only programming in Ruby now.
Oh, you're only programming in Ruby. I thought you said.
See, that's what Microsoft needs: Visual Ruby.
Well, I completely to drag myself off topic. I started playing with Komodo from ActiveState, and there was I'm not sure if it's still up there. I think I posted it out in the forums. Basically, it was a free copy of Personal Edition that you couldn't do commercial application development on, blah, 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 blah. But it had all the Ruby stuff built right into it, and I've been sort of fiddling with that. It's interesting.
Cool.
Let's just leave it at that.
Yeah, I haven't messed with Komodos. I've been messing with RadRails, which is something that people should check out. But, yeah, I haven't gotten very far in it, and I'll try to get us back on topic. I just figured I had to throw out the Ruby on Rails thing just to make myself feel complete.
Yeah, just to piss me off, eh? Yeah, when is
come
mine
on,
getting done?
Love it. When the scene gets together and gives me enough money to not work ever again. No,
I've had, like, two people in the past, like, week ask me, dude, what's up with Bell's mine? I'm like, what do you expect me to know? Talk to Not Theory.
Yeah. People can email me and ask me. I got a couple emails this week, actually, about the Bell's mine PBX and some other stuff. And I got right on top of them and fixed them. You know, Bell's mine is still up and running in the old way. I thought I was going to have time to do it, and then I get slammed with a whole bunch of new projects. But it's still up and running, and I don't know. I'm hoping that I can get it done in the next 3 weeks, but we'll see about that. I can't promise anything.
This whole overhaul thing in a couple of weeks, starting at the beginning of November, just sort of, you know, a lot like Microsoft in that way, because Not Theory likes Microsoft so much, he's following their release schedule.
Oh, yeah. Hey, no, honestly, the rewrite, from what I've looked at, really isn't all that hard. It's just that I need the time to sit down and fiddle with it enough. There are a few things that are complicated, but most of, like, you know, the MPA NXX searches and the number submission and stuff like that, it's cake. I can bang that out in like a couple of hours, but it's just a case of finding the time and just getting the damn thing done.
Ruby on Rails is cool, but this is just the whole. It they want you to do certain ways, certain things, certain ways, and I'm not figuring out how to actually work around that. Or they let you configure it, but it's just not as configurable as I like. So, Apple on Rails ain't happening anytime soon.
No, I totally understand. Anyway, so Visual Studio.
Visual Studio. Well, we're just talking about free, not Theory of Black Ratchet, rap about programming on the next Bin Rev Radio.
Yeah.
Another cool thing about Visual, one of my personal favorite in Visual Studio 2005 over 2003 is that they've taken all their object names and they've apparently actually put some thought into them. Like, for example, like even like going back to like Visual Studio 6, like for like, you know, menu, if you like make a drop down menu, you'd have like, you know, main menu, and then you'd have menu item 1, menu item 2, 3, 4, 5, and you just keep on going down and down. So say in Visual Studio 2005, I have the main menu, and then I have like I want to create a file, so it names that object menu file. Then I do like, you know, menu, then I create a drop down menu under that with a new, and it names that one menu file new. And I'm like, oh my God, thank God. Because I basically, every time you have to do it, you have to go and rename every menu object one is really menu file new. And it's just, oh, it's very tedious.
Yeah, I hate that about 2003 as well. Button one, always button one. What the hell? It just sucks.
Yeah, when you actually give, like, you know, you name button one okay, it names it button okay. I'm like, oh, wow, someone actually is smart. Thank God.
Yep. And actually, it's got a new feature now. It's got, well, I don't know the 2003 had it. I don't think it did, but refactoring, code refactoring.
Oh, no, 2003 didn't have that.
Okay, yeah, because I haven't seen it in there, but I wanted to make sure that I was not crazy. Yeah, code refactoring is great, because even if you name something really stupidly all over your code, it's smart enough where you can right-click on it and click refactor and say, this is the name of this object, intelligently go through, find all the references to this object that are actually this object, and rename them to this. That way, if you had button okay in like 10,000 places and you want to rename it button cancel, but there's another button okay somewhere in your application, it's smart enough to not get confused and rename the other button okay button cancel. So that is a real time saver, and you can do it to variables, you can do it to objects, you can do it to pretty much anything anything you want in Visual Studio 2005. It is awesome.
Yes, that is very handy, especially with me, because I constantly, I instantly forget, like, you know, when you're talking about, you know, menu item one, I accidentally missed one of them. This actually happened to me a couple of weeks ago. I actually recently discovered that I missed, like, menu item one, and my OCD just kicked in saying, I need to fix this. And I had to go and root around and, like, you know, fix by hand, like, various function calls over it, and it just drove me batty. But when I sat down and I actually... I ran into this problem on Visual Studio 2005 and said, oh, crap, I got to rename this, and that's going to be annoying. And I said, okay, this is now button okay, or just to use that as an example. And I said, oh, you renamed this. Do you want to go through? Do you want me to go all through your code and change this for you? And I was like, oh, I love you. And that actually, that's like one of the first experiences I had, and I said, wow, that's it right there. That Visual Studio 2005 is actually not half bad.
Yep.
One of the cool things about it is, another fun thing is partial classes, because I like to keep all of my code in like separate little files, and when I'm making a class, I like, it was fun to actually keep everything in, I didn't like keeping everything in one file for a class, and I don't know why. Some people like doing that. Personally, I don't. But with 2005, and I'm pretty sure you can do this straight across the board. I've only really done this in C#. Is you can actually make like something called partial classes, and you can keep certain functions in one file, and then, you know, have the same class but keep certain other functions in another file. And it's pretty good. It's I've used only once, and it was a very light tweaking, more along the lines of, hey, let's go see if I can actually do this. And it looks very interesting. I'm going to actually probably have to use that a little more. They actually came out with something, well, I guess you could kind of say this is Visual Studio, but they actually have something called Visual Studio Team Server. And in reality, it's essentially it's a combination of Mantis and CVS and, you know, whatever you want to call it, or Subversion, if you want to call it that. And it's pretty good. It's got, like, integrated bug tracking and build maintaining, and it's... They were doing I never actually used this, but they did a demo of it at the launch event, and I was saying, wow, that's actually pretty nice. And it's all, they have like concurrency management, you know who has what file checked out at the glance, and it's all nicely integrated within Visual Studio. And I really can't talk about it much other than what I just saw some executive VP in Boston showed me, but it was pretty cool. I was quite impressed. Certainly beats the crap out of Visual Source Safe.
Yeah, you know, I've never had the displeasure of using Visual Source Safe, but I've heard really bad things about it. So
I've never used it, but I've admitted it, and it's not fun. Basically, it's essentially what it is giant shares, and it just has some type of version tracking in it, and the version tracking sometimes doesn't work too well, or rarely works at all. So, it's...
Really, yeah, I heard somewhere that you couldn't... It was very difficult to have people, like, working on the source code simultaneously, because they had to check out and lock files and all kinds of stuff like that. Something like Subversion, people can... check out the source code, and they can edit the same files and merge in, with a very simple interface. They don't have to worry about locking files ever, really. There is an option to lock files in Subversion, but I don't know why you would ever use it.
Basically, with Source Safe, it was merge did not exist. That was it right there. You basically could lock files or not. Thankfully enough, in the application that I had to use it, instance that I had to use it, I really didn't have to worry about it that much. It was more of just one developer who was very annoying, and I didn't like him at all. But he just wanted to use it for version control. So, hey, more power to him. Half right fun. Hopefully it won't break.
Yeah, right.
So, everyone knows that Visual Studio is insanely cross-prohibitive. So, actually, Microsoft took its head out of its butt and said, well, hey, we have all these people out here who want to actually do stuff on Windows and really don't care about whether or not the whole political behind it, but they just want to write code, much like myself. So, they actually released something this time called Visual Studio Express Editions. And this is actually pretty cool, and I got to give them a lot of props for this, because basically what they did is they gave you a trimmed-down version of Visual Studio that works more or less the same way. It's completely the same, it's just missing a lot of advanced features. So, okay, let's just lightly gloss over them. First one that they really try to push is one they were really trying to pushing in, they like talked about this endlessly at the launch event, was a Visual Web Developer 2005 Express Edition. And basically what it is it's kind of like a front page, a combination of front page and ASP.NET IDE. It's lightweight, easy to use. They want to, like, that's what they're trying to push for ASP.NET 2.0 applications. And one of the cool things about it is it actually, with a lot of the Express Editions, they include stuff called starter kits, and that's like, you know, pre-canned samples of certain things. You can actually download some off their website. Like, they have the one they actually demoed was a band fan site for some reason, and everything's actually, they're trying to really push that you can do, like, integrated e-commerce on this. Of course, I'm not really sure if I just want to do e-commerce on Microsoft. We won't get into that. They have all the, like, the starter kit, and they all the things have a nice integrated web server in them, which is a big thing because you do not need to install IIS on your desktop. Oh, thank God. Because I think I've the three times that, like, I've seen IIS installed on a desktop, it's usually been a factor in some type of virus attack. Like always.
Yeah, or I've seen it installed quite a few times where it destroys the machine. I mean, the performance just goes to hell. So it might as well be a virus.
Well, all Microsoft products are a virus. We won't get into that.
That's true.
The other interesting thing, I actually haven't fooled around with this, but they have something called SQL Server Express Edition. And it's basically a really, really toned-down version of SQL Server. Like, you don't have all their business logic and all their stuff out there. I'm not sure if I mentioned this. All of these are free to download, and the free has a caveat, but we'll get into this later. They also have all the different IDEs. They have Visual Basic 2005 Express. Basically, it's for you ninnies out there who want to say, "Oh, I'm not cool enough to develop on C Sharp." You know, you can use your wimpy ass Visual Basic. Then there's Visual C Sharp 2005 Express, and personally, for those of you who don't know, I like C Sharp. C Sharp is a very yummy blend of Java and C++, and I'm going to go out and say it. I think Microsoft might have gotten the language right.
I agree. And if you're using Visual Basic and you want to convert to C Sharp, it's really not that hard. I converted like 1,000 or 2,000 lines of code from Visual Basic .NET to C Sharp the other day in no time. It's just a joke. And once you get used to the C Sharp syntax, I think you'd be addicted to it because it's a lot more clear. It's got a lot less of the English, like, dim this variable as this type. Like, you don't need dim. You don't need as. Like, this variable is this type. It's just that simple. Visual Basic, in my mind, is too wordy. It tries to make itself look too much like English, and in that, it makes itself just awkward and terrible to use. I personally can't stand it. And I don't know why anybody who's starting programming would think, like, Visual Basic is a good thing to do. C Sharp, like you said, Java and C++ together, and it uses a .NET framework, so it's all the code is managed, and it does garbage collection and all that other fun stuff. So, I mean, you can't go wrong with it.
I'm not a fan of Java, but we won't get into that. I don't know. That's what I like about C#, is that it's Java-like. I like the concept of Java, I just don't like the implementation of it. That's my
opinion. I don't like Java either, so I'm with you on that one. I used J2ME for a little while because it was the only thing I could use to develop on phones, but now that I can use C# to develop on phones, there's no reason I would ever want to use Java again. I think it's trash. So,
there's also Visual C++ 2005 Express, and for those of you who want to just do C++ development on Windows, I actually haven't used this. I don't know how it actually fits in the whole .NET architecture scheme of things.
I think most of the Visual C++ stuff is just to develop native unmanaged code.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what I would think, but I haven't used it, so I don't know. There's also Visual J Sharp, and I really don't understand why they have this. I don't understand at all. It's Java, but it's Java with .NET, and it has nice little ties to the .NET framework. And I actually started thinking about it on the ride home after I wrote out all my notes about J Sharp, and I finally actually came to the conclusion that they might use it for trying to get themselves into the whole, you know, computer science curriculum, because, like, apparently computer science people are yay, 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 Java. for some unknown reason, but we won't get into that.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't really get it either.
Yeah, I don't understand. I cut my teeth on C++, and C++ was very much a learning experience. And I'm not saying that in a bad way, but whatever. So, yeah, I don't know why they use it. I guess there might be one person in India who might develop on it, but I really don't know. So we're always talking about Express Editions. So what's the major difference here? The Express Editions, what they're saying is that it's designed for hobbyists, students, novice developers. But even if you're not a novice, as long as you're not, you don't need one of the things that are missing out of it. Like, for example, if you're doing Pocket PC development, you need the full version of Visual Studio. None of that stuff's included with Visual Studio Express, any of the Express Edition. So when I got my copy of, that's basically the sole reason why I signed up for the launch event, because I wanted Standard Edition for free so I could do Pocket PC development. Like SQL Server Express, I really don't know what the big deal is about it. I looked at it as basically it's for something you can install locally on your PC in case you don't have a SQL Server directly to access, like if it's on your laptop or something. But, yeah, whatever. They're really designed just for people who want to learn about it but don't really want to feel like shelling out $350 for a full copy of Visual Studio. So we said earlier that they are free. Now, this has a little bit of caveat on it. What they were originally going to do is they were going to announce Visual Studio Express. Each copy would be $50. But when they released it, everything got released November 6th in my notes. That's what I was going to say. And it's free until November 6th, 2006. But my personal idea is that it's going to be free forever. I mean, because who's going to actually start paying $50 for this after it's been free for a year? So I'm really going to think like right around October, they're going to say, oh, really? Yeah, we're not going to actually start charging money for this. But, of course, they could be stupid and actually do it. But personally, I don't see it happening. Also, they make a thing here with the the SQL Server Express Edition is completely different from this. So, Lord only knows. So, whenever that is. You can grab all these right off the Microsoft website, and I actually had trouble finding the starter kit, so I'm going to just toss this URL out here. It's msdn.microsoft.com/vstudio, and that's the URL for the Visual Studio stuff. And there's also same URL, /vstudio, and if you go to /downloads/starter kits, and that's all the free stuff they give you to start off with, like a ton of samples. They actually have one of the questions in their FAQ is, why are there no starter kits for C++? And they said, well, we really don't have anything. So I guess kind of a sign. Yeah, I found it quite humorous. They have everything else, though. So I guess that's the kind of a sign that Visual C++ is kind of on its way out.
Yeah, as they move all of the, not all of the libraries, but most of the libraries from native to managed, I think that C++ is going to disappear. There's still going to be some things you need to do in native code, but I think its role is going to be greatly reduced.
In Microsoft development, I foresee it actually going. I mean, you're always going to need to do stuff in C++. Saying that C++ is dead is just sad.
Hey, I checked this starter kit thing that you just said. I just checked it out. They have a mobile ink to-do starter kit. It's like an application that you can use your pen on your tablet PC and all kinds of cool stuff. Man, this is awesome.
Some of us don't have tablet PCs, you moron.
Hey, this machine was not really that expensive, and it's a gateway, so it's junk, so don't be jealous.
So how much was it?
I think it was $1,400 all told, but they have it now. think, for $12.50. They keep going on sale and off sale, on sale, off sale. So should be about, it should be between $12.50 and $1,400 now. But it's nice, and the battery life is really long, and the screen is great, and I think this machine is awesome. I say it's junk because it's the Gateway, because it's funny to say, but it's actually a pretty good machine.
Gateway used to make solid machines, but then they like started losing money, and I'm actually kind of surprised that they're still even making machines. I really don't see them advertised or even think about them.
Yeah, I wasn't even aware that they existed either. I wasn't aware that they still existed either. I was just searching for tablet PCs, and on Google AdWords, like an ad for the Gateway PC came up, and it was like half the price of the comparable Dell. So, couldn't turn it down.
No, that's not bad.
Yeah. It's not a tablet. It's a convertible. It's both a tablet and a laptop. So, it's all.
I see that.
But anyway.
That's something I would like to go for.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're solo editions. Those are pretty hot back in, like, 1998 or so. Those are pretty good. Nice solid PCs. Not as good as ThinkPads, but we won't get into that.
Yeah.
So is there anything that I really didn't cover with the whole Visual Studio nonsense?
Trying to think. No, I mean, other than probably some nitty-gritty details of, like, exact limitations of SQL Server Express. I used to know what they were, and I don't know what they are anymore. I can't really think of anything else. Now, I've got actually a question for you about this, though. I had this Visual Studio 2005 Beta 2 copy. Am I eligible for an upgrade to Visual Studio Full? Like, not Full, but Visual Studio Standard? Because I know that there's a standard edition, there's a standard edition upgrade. One's 300, one's 200. So how do I find out if I'm eligible?
I really don't know. I think actually the upgrades for Visual Studio 2003, if you have the beta, you're hosed.
Really?
Yeah.
That's terrible.
Well, if basically, I'll toss this out here. If you're interested, and if you can go to one of your launch events, I think there's still like, you know, three or four left on the West Coast. If you want to go to a launch event, you will get a free copy of Visual Studio 2005, SQL Server 2005, and BizTalk 2006 when it comes out. Along with, like, you know, I got, like, a bag of swag, and they have, like, the Windows 2003 Server Standard Edition, like, 180-day trial, and they got some crazy stuff on there.
I got a 180-day trial of that once, but it never expired. I couldn't figure
really?
That out. Yeah.
Crap, I might have to install this then.
Yeah, give it a
right now, I'm still running my whole educational copy of Windows 2000 that I picked up when I was in college, which technically, I asked the Microsoft guy point blank, when I leave school, do I have to not use this anymore? He said, oh, no. I was like, okay, I'm gonna hold you to that. So I like to thank Microsoft.
They're going to send Bill Gates to your house to rough you up.
Buy him out, boys.
Exactly.
Anyway, well, I guess we're gonna start sort of wrapping up. Do you have any announcements?
Other than what you told me before, that Yapple's converting completely to Ruby on Rails tomorrow. No, not really.
Yeah, I got. Well, apparently, according to all the Ruby on Rails evangelists over here, you can do it in like an hour. You can convert an entire web application, but I'm just looking at it going, what the hell is this?
Yeah, see, that's the thing. If you know the language, you could do it very quickly. Like, if I really knew Ruby on Rails, I could convert Bell's mind in less than a day, guaranteed. Because there's really, in PHP, it's very complicated to do these things, but in Ruby on Rails, the framework makes it really easy to do a lot of the reporting that I do. But the thing is, there's little things in the language that I don't know yet that just make it impossible. So I've got to do more reading, and then once I figure that out, then this application will take me a while to develop, but the next application after that will be much, much faster.
Really, I'm tempted to buy their book. They have a book available on their website, and I'm looking at it going, I guess I could possibly get that, and I'll just go from there. Because really, there's not a lot of good explanations online, in my opinion. I mean, I printed out like two or three stuff that, like, you know, here's how to do a Ruby on Rails app, and it was okay, but didn't answer a lot of my questions about syntax and how certain things actually work under the hood. And
yeah, that's what a lot of it's missing, is how it works under the hood, which confuses me. Like, I'm not content with just saying, oh, okay, I do this, this, and this, and I have a blog. Like, okay, that's great, but I'm not looking to build a blog. You know, I need to know how this works and how I could apply it to something else. Now, which Ruby on Rails book did you see? Do you remember the title of it?
It's right on the Ruby on Rails website. It's their quote-unquote official one.
The Agile Development with
Rails?
Yeah,
Agile Development. Yeah, that sounds right.
Okay. Now, of course, you're going to yell at me because every time we bring up anything, you say, I have it. I have the book. And hey, it's like a $20 book. Give me a break. You can get it in PDF format, too, if you don't want to actually, like, read it on paper. But
sorry, I like my books in dead tree format.
Actually, I do, too. So that's the way I got it. It takes you through building an e-commerce site. So I've gotten, I'd say, maybe a third through it, and it's pretty good, but again, it's limited in such a way, like, there's certain things I want to know how to develop, and their example of building an e-commerce site really doesn't lend itself to exactly what I want to do. So even when I get through that, even when I've gotten through as far as I've gotten, I have questions. I have a feeling that by the time I get to the end of the book, all my questions will be answered, or at least close enough where I can go and figure it out on my own. But as of right now, I'm still a little lost. But with RadRails, the IDE that I found, I think I should be able to pick it up pretty quickly.
Well, maybe when you're done with the book, you'll have to come on the show again, and we'll have to talk about Ruby on Rails. And
I am down, because either I'll come on the show and eat my words and say Ruby on Rails is junk, or I'll be back on the show saying that PHP is junk. So
you know what? I'm not sure if Stank ever had it, but we need a show where just someone comes on and completely rips into a software product and just, like, you know, tears it apart. That'd be an interesting show.
Well, I think I might be able to do that with quite a few pieces of software. So you pick one and you give me a date and I'm there.
Oh, we'll have to talk about that sometime. Just so everyone knows, going back to personal hacking stories, I finally moved the whole. I've recently integrated Yapl with Google Maps, and Google Maps is pretty cool. And I've actually kind of moved it out from complete alpha testing to beta, which means, hey, it's on the site and it sort of works, just, you know, don't expect it to work all the time. So if you want to go check that out, it's yapl.org. I'm slowly integrating it more and more, but that's pretty cool. Google Maps is fun. Maybe we'll do an episode on that. Let's see. 2,600 meetings are this, right? No, next week, no. See, I'm confused. I am completely confused. This whole, like, you know, Christmas season just has me horribly, like, confused as to what week it is. Site of the week. If you actually go to my weblog, I mentioned this in one of today's posts, tinyurl.com/CharlieSierraTangoVictorPapa. And it's a weblog entry from someone at MIT, a girl at MIT, one of, like, the three of them there, about one of the hacks they've recently pulled off recently. Apparently what they did is they did their entire front lobby of their main building into a Super Mario theme. And if you go down this really long hallway, it's an entire Super Mario level.
Really?
Yeah, it's pretty
cool. I
gotta
check that out.
Oh, tinyurl.com/CharlieSierraTangoVictorPapa. It's pretty cool. It was very well done. A lot of people were complaining on, they posted on Flashdot, and all the trolls came out saying, "Oh, that's not a really impressive hack." But if you actually have ever been to MIT, this lobby is probably about 3 or 4 stories high, and somehow they managed to suspend this completely 3D. If you remember Super Mario Brothers 1, you had the pipes you could go down to. They had like a completely 3D pipe, and they had a Mario coming out of it. And it was just, I looked it out, and I've been in the building before, and I was like, how did they manage to hang that up there?
Hmm.
Yeah, school rules were definitely broken in setting this up. Email. If you're actually going to email us, maybe we can shoot for a week of no email. That'd be kind of pathetic. But it's getting down there. Radio@binrev.com. Send us your questions. Tell us that Microsoft sucks. I'd like to apologize again for having no phone calls this week, but Zygmunt wasn't here and Strom had personal business. I assume Zygmunt had personal business too. It was partially our fault that we couldn't actually get everything set up correctly. Strom actually found out he couldn't be here about 4:30 this afternoon. He's like, "I can't be here. I don't know what to do." And I was like, "Calm down. I'll figure it out."
Yeah, not a big deal.
Yeah, whatever. We're always cool as long as somebody's here talking and rambling on. And Not Theory's always a good guest, so.
I love to ramble and yell and get angry about things that are inconsequential. It's great.
It's great. That's what the internet's all about.
Yep.
Closing music this week. Earthbound. It's the Red Blue Sanctuary remix, and it's on from ocremix.org. Yet another wonderful video game remix site. So, do you have anything else you want to say out here?
Nope. I'm just tired and getting ready to go to sleep. So, I'm done.
All right. So, we will see you next week. Same hack time.
Same hack channel.